This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 172 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. If you don't believe in regression, then I've got a way to show you that it's real. Go listen to this matchup show from week 3, and then go listen to it in week 4. I was awful in week 3, but then the regression hit. Week 4 was everything. Last week, I picked up on Taylor Gabriel as a deep sleeper. I loved Joe Flacco and John Brown. Philip Lindsay was a clear start. Aaron Jones was called out as a guy to play. And then there was Andy Dalton. And then there was Sony Michel. And then there was Sterling Shepard. The only egregious miss last week was Jared Goff. And it was definitely an egregious miss. I liked him more as a QB2, but he most definitely wasn't a QB2. And I learned my lesson. No matter what the matchup looks like, never bet against Sean McVay. That offense is really something else. But it's a new week and I'm looking forward to it. Before digging into the guys that I'm higher on and lower on this week though, I wanted to let you guys know about FanDuel's really cool Guru tool. It makes building smarter lineups simple for fans of all skill levels. So whether you're new to FanDuel or you're a seasoned vet, you can be confident you're putting the best team on the field. Guru is powered by NumberFire Analytics, so make sure to check out the tool in the FanDuel app today. I'll start with a player who's currently ranked as a QB2 over on Fantasy Pros, but someone who I see as a QB1 this week, and that's Kirk Cousins. The Eagles' defense is one that teams throw on a lot because their front is so strong. And so far this year, they've faced the highest pass-to-run ratio in the entire NFL. Meanwhile, the Minnesota offense is first in the league in pass-to-run ratio, and when they're in neutral game scripts, they rank fifth. Part of that is because they've seen really strange game flows so far this season, but they also can't run the football. Minnesota's running backs have just a 25.5% success rate this season, which is the lowest in the league. Now, passing attempts don't really correlate to fantasy success on a weekly level at the quarterback position because most quarterbacks are throwing a lot of passes naturally each week. But the reason to like a pass-first game plan is because if and when Minnesota scores, there's a higher likelihood that that's how they're going to be scoring. They're going to be scoring through the air. That game has a lower over-under and it's being played in Philadelphia. I think that's why a lot of people aren't as high on Kirk Cousins. And I get it, he definitely doesn't have a super high floor this week. But I think the matchup is pretty decent for him, and then he can be a QB1. If you want to dig a little bit deeper, I think that Derek Carr is in play as a streamer here in Week 5. The Raiders game against the Chargers has a really nice over-under, and LA's secondary and defense in general has really underperformed this year. They haven't really been getting to the quarterback, and they've allowed the fourth highest net yards per attempt rate. And they also rank 10th worst in NumberFire's schedule-adjusted pass defense ranks. Meanwhile, Oakland's really gotten better each week through the air. They struggled a bit in Week 1 against a good and healthy Rams secondary, but Derek Carr completed 29 of his 32 passes in Week 2 against Denver. He chucked it for 345 yards in Week 3 against Miami, and then last week happened where he went bananas in a game that went into overtime. Carr has a pretty low average depth of target this year at just 6.4, but he ranks 3rd in the NFL in success rate. He's having a good season, and with a 3.6% touchdown rate, there is some positive regression coming his way in the touchdown column, given his career average rate is roughly 4.5%. So I like Derek Carr in this matchup, which is something that I did not think that I would be saying at the beginning of the season. Russell Wilson really hasn't been getting it done in fantasy football this year, and I'm really fearful of his matchup against LA this week. And that's even without Aqib Talib. We know Seattle has issues up front, and we also know that the Rams can cause issues with their defensive line. But Wilson himself hasn't hit 300 passing yards in a game this year, and he's really been limited on the ground this season too, and that's really key. He only has 42 rushing yards when he averaged almost 37 rushing yards per game last season. That's hurt his fantasy value tremendously. He's finished higher than QB17 just once this season. He's at home, and that helps, but Russell Wilson is a mid-range QB2 at best this week. The next one might be a little bit obvious, but you can't play Baker Mayfield this week either. Baltimore owns the best secondary in football according to NumberFire's metrics, and they're getting cornerback Jimmy Smith back from suspension this week. That's not even fair. Honestly, instead of Baker Mayfield, you're better off playing the quarterback opposite of Mayfield in that game, Joe Flacco. The deep quarterback play this week is Dak Prescott. So far this season, Houston ranks 5th in running back efficiency allowed according to NumberFire's metrics, and they're 7th best in success rate allowed to the position. When adjusted for strength of opponent, they've got the 3rd best run defense in football across the first 4 games. And the Texans are also at home this week. It's not a week where Dallas is going to be able to dictate pace as they usually try to do. So that means they'll have to score and win by throwing the football. Do I trust that that can happen? No, not really. That's why Dak Prescott is a deep play rather than a regular streaming option this week. But Houston hasn't been good against the pass, ranking second worst in football according to NumberFire. The only quarterback to not post a QB1 performance, or should I say a fringe QB1 performance, because Eli Manning was a QB13 against him in week 3, was Blaine Gabbert. Tom Brady was QB8 in week 1, Eli was QB13 in week 3, and Andrew Luck was QB3 last week. The matchup is there for Dak Prescott. Let's just hope that we see good Dak Prescott. I feel like I talk about Nyheim Hines on every single podcast that I do, but I really do like his talent, and I think that he's in a great, great spot this week. He's also just naturally a good fit for this Colts team. It's one that might not be ultra competitive this year, and anytime they're in a negative game script, you know the pass-catching Hines will be on the field. So far this season, he's got a 14% target share in that offense, and over the last 2 weeks without Marlon Mack, he's played roughly 70% of Indianapolis' snaps. Marlon Mack is out once again, so that's great news for Nyheim Hines. And again, these high snap rates have a little bit to do with the fact that the Colts have been in negative game scripts. But that's what we should expect this week as they go to New England as double-digit underdogs. Hines could and should see lots of volume through the air in this matchup. All season long, I've said some bad things about Derrick Henry. Not about him as a player per se, but his situation has just been awful. He was featured in 15 transactions back after week 1 as a player to sell, and his workload continues to be pretty meh when compared to Deion Lewis's. But if there's one game for Derrick Henry to get going, it might be this one. The Titans will be in Buffalo this week as favorites, and the Bills haven't been great against the run, allowing below average efficiency and success rate marks to running backs this season. Henry does have more goal line carries than teammate Deion Lewis this year, and while his target share is absolute crap, his rushing share is fine enough at 45%. And if this ends up being a super positive script for Tennessee, which is absolutely possible, then we may see him featured more than usual. He's definitely risky, though. Anytime you're playing a running back who's game script dependent like this, you're risking that player not being on the field very much. But if you're in need of running back help because maybe one of yours is on a bye, Henry could work. One running back I think fantasy analysts may be a little bit too high on this week is Matt Breida. He's in the mid RB2 range over on Fantasy Pros, and I would assume a lot of that has to do with the fact that Arizona has allowed the most fantasy points to running backs to start the year. But the Cardinals have also faced 140 rushing attempts, which is the most in the league by far. They've seen a lot of bad scripts to start the season, forcing more runs against them. This isn't to say that they're a bad matchup, but volume is making it seem a lot worse. On a per-play basis, they actually rank closer to the middle of the pack in rushing efficiency allowed, according to NumberFire's expected points model. And the Cardinals, I think we would all agree, are a better team with Josh Rosen under center rather than Sam Bradford. That lowers the chances of an extreme positive script for San Francisco, which would help Matt Breida. Now, Breida's fine because he can play all three downs for San Francisco, but I'd rather play a lot of players listed below him in the rankings this week, like Alex Collins, Tevin Coleman probably, Philip Lindsay, and maybe even Nyheim Hines and Aaron Jones. Another player I'm a little bit lower on than consensus is Lamar Miller. Miller's usage this season has been fine, but not great. He has a 51% rushing share and a 7% target share so far this year. He's got 12 red zone rushes, which is great, and he's seen a couple of goal line attempts, which is also really good, but he's just not been productive. He's yet to rank higher than RB23 in a given week this year in PPR formats. And Dallas hasn't been all that bad against opposing running backs. Saquon Barkley was RB5 against them in week 2, but it was because he saw 16 targets. Chris Carson was RB7 in week 3, but he also saw 32 carries. In the end, they rank as a complete average team against the run. So the matchup isn't necessarily a plus one for Lamar Miller. But Miller is ranked right with Matt Breida this week, and I don't fully agree in PPR formats. I think the players I just named who should be ahead of Breida apply for Lamar Miller as well. My deep play of the week at running back is Corey Grant. TJ Yeldon is obviously the play in the Jacksonville backfield with Leonard Fournette ruled out for week 5, but do not sleep on Corey Grant. He didn't play many snaps last week, which is a huge concern, but the matchup is definitely there against the Chiefs on Sunday. Grant's primarily a pass-catching back, and the Chiefs have allowed the third highest success rate to running backs through the air this season. They've also been horrendous at stopping the run, but if Jacksonville either gets in shootout mode or trails in this game, we could see an uptick in snaps for Corey Grant. Or at least more snaps than he saw in week 4, which is a pretty nice script for the Jags offense. He's really more of a dart throw, but I do think it's a logical one as long as you're in a PPR league. Doug Baldwin returned from injury last week, and he played about 75% of Seattle's snaps. That's not exactly where you want things to be, but it's not a bad sign given he was injured. He ended up leading the team in targets with 7, and he didn't look all that limited. So I think it's safe to say that Baldwin is back to being discussed as a weekly option. And I was surprised to see him ranked as a wide receiver 3 this week. The Seahawks get the Rams, as I said earlier, but the Rams are without Aqib Talib, and they also are coming off a game where Adam Thielen had 4 catches for 83 yards in the score from the slot, and Stephon Diggs caught another 4 passes from that area of the field for 40 yards. That's all according to Pro Football Focus. The Seahawks are going to want to run the football because they think that that's how you win games in the NFL. But chances are they won't be able to do that against this high-powered Rams offense. That means more potential volume for Baldwin in what's not a bad matchup. And given he saw work last week and played at least a reasonable number of snaps, he's firmly in high-end wide receiver 3 to low-end wide receiver 2 territory for me this week. You're probably not benching Emmanuel Sanders, but I should mention that I like him a lot this week too. Probably more than most. He'll be facing Buster Screen in the slot, and Screen's allowed the 9th most yards per snap from the slot this season per Pro Football Focus. The only fear with Manny Sanders is that he won't get looks close to the end zone, because he hasn't been getting looks in the red zone this year. He's the only top 30 wide receiver in fantasy football without a red zone target. But you can't deny the matchup against the Jets, and he should be in your lineup. I know Julian Edelman is coming off a suspension, but it's hard for me to see him as a lower end wide receiver 3 like a lot of rankers see him as this week. The Patriots have a high team total, and Rob Gronkowski is banged up. At the time of this recording, Rob Gronkowski has not been ruled out, but even if he plays, he might not be as involved as he usually would be. They've needed a piece like Edelman all season long, and it's not like he's coming off an injury. So this is more of just a, hey, if you've got Julian Edelman, I would play him type of note. There's nothing super detailed about it aside from the fact that I'd expect him to see volume right away, even though he hasn't played the first 4 games of the season. Corey Davis was a buy candidate on this week's 15 Transactions podcast, given his crazy usage, but his matchup in Week 5 is not an easy one. Not only is it possible that Tennessee doesn't throw the ball a whole lot, but Davis will see Tre'Davious White, who's been balling out this year. White has seen a target on every 10.4 snaps according to Pro Football Focus, which is one of the best rates in the league, meaning he's not being thrown at very often because he's good, and he's yet to allow a touchdown. So Corey Davis is more of a wide receiver 3 for me this week. Someone who you may be wanting to play or you might be forced to play this week because of bye weeks is Antonio Callaway. And I saw him ranked as a wide receiver 4 this week, but I think he's a do not play no matter what type of player. He struggled with drops last week, and Hugh Jackson talked about not playing him as much right now given his struggles. The writing is on the wall that we're going to see less Antonio Callaway. And in a matchup that's really brutal, he's not someone that I want in my lineup. My deeper play at wide receiver this week is Dante Moncrief. It's tough to pinpoint which Jacksonville wide receiver is going to go off in a given game, and the downside with Moncrief is that he has the worst target share between himself, Keelan Cole, and Dede Westbrook. But that's also why he's not looked at the same way by fantasy owners. The main reason I like Moncrief in this week's matchup against Kansas City is because the Chiefs have allowed the second most air yards in football, and Moncrief has by far the highest average depth of target among the 3 main wideouts in Jacksonville. So if you want a piece of the Jacksonville passing game in this matchup, he's a cheap way to get it. As usual, I won't get into any tight ends and defenses that you should be sitting because it's really not worthwhile. So let's talk about one tight end that I love, and that's Vance McDonald. McDonald's now been active for 3 games, but we continue to see him emerging as the Steelers' primary pass catcher at the tight end position in that offense. He saw a similar number of routes run in weeks 2 and 3 versus teammate Jesse James, but this past week against Baltimore, according to Pro Football Focus, McDonald ran 32 routes to Jesse James' 11, and he played significantly more snaps. Vance McDonald is the dude, and in a game this week against Atlanta that should feature lots of scoring, he's a great tight end start. If you want to dig deeper, and I mean a lot deeper, I don't totally hate Jeff Swaim. He's been the only Dallas tight end who's been running lots of routes consistently for that offense, and the matchup against Houston this week is a pretty good one. The Texans have allowed a top 8 tight end performance in 3 of their 4 games this year, with the one game where they didn't being against Tennessee, who ranks 6th worst in tight end receptions this season. They're not exactly utilizing the position. As I noted earlier, the Cowboys could be forced to throw more than they'd like to in this contest, and that should also benefit Swaim. So if you need a deep play at the dumpster fire position that is the tight end position, he could be it. The 2 defenses this week that I like are Tennessee and Carolina. With the Titans, you've got a team that ranks in the top 10 in sacks facing the squad that's allowed the most sacks this year in Buffalo. In 2 of Josh Allen's 3 starts, he's thrown multiple interceptions. The Bills are a team that you want to target each week, and this week, even though they're on the road, it's all about the Titans' defense. The Panthers are also in a good spot coming off a bye facing the Giants. New York has allowed the fifth most sacks in football this year, and three of the four defenses to face the Giants have finished as top seven options in fantasy football. Those three defenses? Jacksonville, Dallas, and New Orleans. Jacksonville we'd expect, but Dallas and New Orleans had their best outings against New York. And this game's in Carolina too. So definitely play the Panthers. That's going to be it for today's show. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've got to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. If you like dad jokes and NFL stats, then it's the perfect Twitter account for you. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you tomorrow with the Mailbag Show.